Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. Talking to Predators and a huge offseason for them. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Alex Doherty from the Tennessean to the program. Alex, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I have to say I'm not feeling great, but I'm gonna power through. If Joe can power through the gout, I think I'm gonna try to give it a go. So
look at Rex Road.
Inspiring me.
Rex Road inspiring people all around our great city with his willingness and his toughness to just continue to work on. Good stuff there.
I thought about bailing, but I said, you know what? Joe is putting it all on the line. He's putting the team on his back. I can do this.
Well, I just appreciate the toughness from you two as we really just soldier on and power through this interview here. So, Alex, we've talked a lot on the show today and yesterday about what a massive offseason this is for the Predators. And one thing that I've talked about is there a path that is realistic where they can get back to being a competitive team? And I'm not just talking about making the playoffs. I'm talking about being a legitimate threat, which Barry Trotz talked about last year when he signed all these guys. Of he wants to be a threat. As you look at where they are, they're at with their roster, where they're at with the center ice position, the defense, all these different things. Does that path exist to you this offseason or not? How do you view that challenge for Barry Trotz?
I think it does exist, but only with some pretty bold moves. You are not going to be back to competitive level with just we signed Ryan Donato in free agency, or we signed they signed a second or third line center and a bottom pairing defenseman. Like, that's not going to make it work. It's not going to be some small move, like, you know, economical move that for a good price and everything. It's going to take at least a couple big moves. And so I kind of was thinking about this. I would say that two of these three things have to be on the table for Trotz. So these three options, that he's got to do at least two of these. One, at least one bold, big trade. I'm talking like the Tkachuk to the Panthers or Weber Subban, something like that, like a big, big trade where you move a big piece for a big piece. You know, you make a trade that both sides are benefiting and getting what they need, or you go for it and make an offer sheet on one of these young centers that's out there. Marco Rossi, Mason McTavish, those are options. I hear JJ Paterka's name out there. That's another option. So, like, that would be another move. And then the last one would be signing another big time free agent, busting out the pocketbook again, signing a big free agent. I would say if they do that, it's probably on the defensive side, like Aaron Ekblad's out there. I mean, there's some options there. But I think if you're going to, as you're talking about it, if they want to get back to anything close to what Florida has, they've got to make some bold moves. They can't just, you know, make little tiny moves here and there to just creep up, because they're so far away from that. I mean, anyone who watched the Panthers just mow through these teams sees the entire depth of their team. They've got lines that are playing on the third and fourth line that are players that are playing on the third and fourth line that would be, you know, probably leading the way on the Predators right now. They've got defensemen everywhere. They got a goaltender that's actually playing like his paycheck says he should play. I mean, it's just they are so far away from where the Predators are. You can't get there unless you make some big moves. And I have no idea if those things are going to happen, by the way. An offer sheet is a big risk. I mean, you miss out on that, or if you make an offer sheet and sign a guy and miss out on those draft picks, it could really come back to bite you. A bold trade, you know, those are hard to pull off, first of all, but also there's no guarantee. You know, they tried that with Kyle Turris. That didn't work out.
Yep.
I just think that if you don't make big moves like the Panthers tried to do or did, it's not going to happen.
I think that's a great breakdown. So let's set that aside, though, Alex, and let's just look at what they have. What is the – because a lot of things went very poorly, in some cases probably about as poorly as you ever could have imagined with some of, you know, with some of the players on this team and just the entire product. What is the realistic hope for just improvement? Let's say they don't make – they get none of that done, but a lot of the, you know, the individual – worst-case scenarios of last year or close to it become best-case scenarios next year. I know that that's also not probably realistic, but I guess what I'm getting at is the current form of this team, how much better can it get?
I mean, it could get a little better. It would to me, if you make no changes and you just go into next year with maybe making a couple of small moves in the offseason, maybe you get a new right-shot defenseman, maybe you – you know, and then, of course, they've got some young guys coming. Tanner Mullendyke's probably going to be here. You know, whoever they get in the top five draft, maybe that person is here, maybe not. But I think it's like the difference between being the third worst team and being a bubble playoff team. That's it. I mean, they can't – I mean, even if things had gone right in a lot of scenarios, even if some of those games that they blow, like the Philadelphia game, even some of those games that – you know, you're going to have some blowouts here and there, blowout losses, but even the games that they just couldn't hold on to for whatever reason, those mental breakdowns in the third period and such. I mean, what's that going to do? It's going to get you like a bubble spot. Maybe you're close to the playoffs. It's not a big, and then you're back to where, you know, fans have been frustrated for 6-7 years now. I mean, back to just maybe making it, but then probably a first round exit. That's why I just think like the only way to do this is if you significantly change your roster going into next season. And the only way to do that is through trades or offer sheets or, you know, trying to send away someone you've already got. I mean, we saw last year, you can't just do it through all through free agency. It's got to be a multi-pronged approach, trades, possibly an offer sheet, maybe get someone in the draft that's going to work right now, maybe make a trade on draft day that gets you a piece that you can use right now. It's just, I don't see, as your question, Joe, I don't see a way that if just everyone plays better next year, they're contending for the Western Conference, you know, champion title. Like, it's just not going to happen.
How much work in your mind has to be done on the defense? Because, you know, we talked so much last year about the lack of scoring, and obviously that was a huge problem. Defensively, they were horrible last year. And I look at where they're at, and you've got Yossi, and, you know, we talked about what's going on with him right now, earlier in the show. You've got, you know, Brady Shea. And beyond that, Alex, I look at it and I say, I mean, they need at least one, probably two, right shot defensemen that could come in and play. You've got Barron, who I think they're excited about and played better at the end of the year. But then you've got this whole mix of Delgado and Stasny and Willsby and all these guys. And I just look at their defense core right now, and I think you got to make some tough choices this offseason and probably add at least one, maybe two pieces from outside the organization and revamp where they're at right now on that.
I think you're absolutely right. They do. But the problem is, I mean, they've already made a couple moves at the end of last year and then just a few weeks ago that just have you scratching your head. Like, what? I mean, I don't know why they decided to get Jordan Oesterle. I mean, he put him on the roster for next year. That doesn't make a lot of sense. He's 32. He's a replacement level guy. St. Andreas England, they just re-signed. Well, I mean, I don't understand that at all. So, like, you're right. I think they do need to make signings, and I think they kind of already did. I think they're like, yep, we're gonna roll again with Andreas England. Of course, like, the young guys are interesting, right? I mean, like, Willsby, we saw, has there's something there.
I agree.
Sure. And Delgado, I guess there's something there, but he's not an everyday guy, I think. I think he's like a seventh, at best, your sixth or seventh guy. The real problem is, as you talked about, the Roman Yossi situation is gotta be worrisome. I mean, yes, the report is that he's going to be okay to play, and it seems like that's probably, he's on track to be fine. But, man, it is just really starting to pile up, and he's got 3 years left. And is that really where you want to be, where your best defenseman is right on a knife's edge of another injury that could cost him a season or his career? So, you know, Brady Shea is the one that I'm actually pretty hopeful that Brady Shea is probably going to be better next year. I think he has to. I mean, I think we saw him kind of grow into his role there. But I think that the defense is a big question mark. I have no idea what it's going to look like. I mean, if you go into next season and it's, again, Shea and Blankenberg and Yossi and Justin Barron, I mean, it's going to be a lot of the same results. It's just not going to be a very good defense.
Alex, very impressed with how you have powered through. Excellent and very sobering breakdown. I have to finish with this. Explain to me, because I know this ruined your weekend because you go every year. How the hell do they cancel all of Bonnaroo because there was going to be some rain? I don't understand it.
Joe, if you're on the front lines like I was, there was a lot of mud and basically there was nowhere for the water to go. So it went in everyone's tents. And it was miserable. It was really bad. I will say, okay, I think that there were parts of it that were okay, and we'll be back. But what's funny is, they still had one day of the festival. Thursday was the festival, and you know who was the final band to play on Thursday was Insane Clown Posse. So ICP just headlined Bonnaroo. How about that?
Very good stuff. My God. Oh, isn't ICP, baby. Detroit's own. My goodness. Pop out the Faygo. I hope you enjoyed that.
And they crushed it. Apparently, they crushed it. I didn't see them because I was going to get a nice night of sleep that night to power through the weekend. But, yeah, it's been a crazy few days. I almost got flooded out, and now I've got some sort of head cold thing that's crushing me right now. But I don't have gout, so I'm feeling better about that.
That is good.
Count your blessings.
Alex, thank you very much for taking time to power through and be with us this morning. Going to be a very fascinating offseason for the entire league that begins now, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you later, guys.
Alex Doherty from the Tennessean covers the Predators, does a great job for them. We'll react to what Alex had to say and get into the Titans coming up next. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Body Rock. Plank, lunge, twist, and push your limits with Body Rock's dynamic muscle sculpting Pilates-inspired classes designed to rock your body to the core. Get half off a $50 gift card now at thegamenashville.com/deals to use at any of Body Rock's four Nashville locations while supplies last. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe, Jeremy Fowler of ESPN has come out with a piece at ESPN.com where he has talked with some scouts and some NFL executives. And basically, they kind of go through what all has happened to this point in the offseason and highlight some of their favorite offseason moves. And, of course, you know, Rodgers to the Steelers is on this. The Commanders acquiring Laremy Tunsil to play left tackle is on this. The one that I would probably pick and that I'm probably most intrigued about, Davante Adams to the Rams and free agency on this list. I mean, there's a lot of moves that have happened this offseason that are going to be really interesting. And Cam Ward being drafted by the Titans on that list, as Fowler has talked to these executives and scouts. And here's what Fowler put in his little breakdown here. Says, as the draft process unfolded, Ward's status as QB1 solidified. Tennessee took its time to make a decision with the number one pick, but ultimately it was not a decision at all. And this was from an AFC executive. Quote, people had some questions about Ward coming into the process, and I feel like he did a good job answering them. The Titans had far less doubts by the end of the process than they did to start, which, Joe, I think is obviously the case given the way that this has all played out with Cam Ward. My question for you is, as you kind of look around the NFL offseason, whether it's the Tunsil move, you know, the Browns and the trade and the draft is on this list as well, Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers, does Cam Ward to the Titans have a chance to be the most impactful move made in the NFL this offseason, in your mind?
Yes, I think it does. You know, it's in some years, it's probably the first thing people talk about. It's the first thing, I'm sure, the same sort of list or the conversation, like when Trevor Lawrence was drafted, for example, right? I mean, I don't remember all the offseason moves in these various years where there was a quarterback taken at the top of the draft. Most years it is a quarterback taken at the top of the draft, not every year. But again, some years it's like, oh my goodness, everybody wishes they could get that quarterback. And this year was, well, Cam Ward's the best of this bunch, so the Titans got him. But it still could be that. I think you could make the case that C.J. Stroud was that 2 years ago, and then look at the incredible transformation. And not just because of him, but it starts with him. And then last year, the exact same thing with Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. Now, I think a year ago, you're still going in at this point, everybody's talking about Caleb Williams, right? And so, you know, I mean, it's just, I think it's a natural thing for that to potentially be the biggest move. I also just think the Titans, and I understand that 2 years ago you would have said this, and a year ago you would have said this, but I still think it's different. I still think the Titans are not in a position for it to be that. I'd be surprised if they are good enough in various parts of their team to make this something the whole league talks about in retrospect or as the season is going on. But you have to consider it a possibility. I mean, even if he gets them to like a 7-8 win team that's still relevant in December, that must mean that he's having a massive impact.
Yeah, I think quarterback is always an accelerator with this conversation. And I mean, the Rodgers to the Steelers thing is interesting because the Steelers have still, even without good quarterback play for the most part, since Roethlisberger left, they've been a team that is a good regular season team that most of the time finds their way into the playoffs, but just haven't been able to win playoff games recently. So, like, I look at Rodgers, and I still, like, I probably view them kind of the same way. Like, I think Rodgers has got a chance to have a good year in Pittsburgh, and I think a good year in Pittsburgh for him probably leads to like a 9-8, 10-7 record, Joe, with them making the playoffs and then probably being an underdog in game one of the playoffs. Like, that's basically where they've been. Now, maybe they go about it in a different way this year, and they just throw the ball a lot more, and they do have some questions on the defensive side of the ball, and T.J. Watt's not getting any younger, and there's contract stuff and all that. So there's a lot to figure out there. But I think quarterback is kind of a natural accelerator for this. And again, like, we could go through every move over the last couple of off seasons, but you'd be hard pressed not to tell me that the biggest moves the last couple of off seasons, in some form or fashion, you don't go very far down the list before you get to Jaden Daniels being drafted by Washington and accelerating them to the NFC Championship in his first year, and CJ Stroud being drafted by the Texans and what he did for him for that team in their first year. Like, those are high on the list. I mean, last year you can look at Saquon if you want to and say that was the most impactful one. They ended up winning the Super Bowl, and obviously he played a huge part in that. So you can go about it different ways. But I guess my point is you don't have to get very far down the list for the impact that some of these rookie quarterbacks have made. And I just think quarterback is a natural accelerator.
Derrick Henry's on that list too. I understand, you know, they didn't get it done in the playoffs, but you can't look at what he did last year and not say he made them better or made a huge difference for them. So, but yeah, absolutely. And the problem maybe for the Titans, reward for Titans fans, is that those are the examples. Cam Ward, I think, is the most likely quarterback to be that impactful, but those are lofty first season comparisons. You know, that's going to be real tough for him to me, especially with what's around him, unless there's just a lot of things that we don't know that are going to be better than they appear to come close to that.
How much of a realistic impact can Cam Ward make with the Titans in year one? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up at 745. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Brian, what are you hoping to see out of Cam out of this final day? Kind of how would you evaluate his performance as a whole in this short week?
Progressed. You know, he's gotten better every time he stepped out. Every situation, a lot of things are new, and every time he did it again or had an opportunity to see the rep again, did a nice job of taking the coaching points and improving on the next timeout. And today will be his third time down here in the red zone. That's important. That's another critical area, area we need to improve in. And that timing happens, everything happens faster. The windows are much more condensed, and it's always good. It's just you can't get enough work down in the red zone. So that's another nice way to cap off the camp for us, is to work down there in the short part of the field and see if he's improved from the last time. So excited about that.
That's Brian Callahan discussing Cam Ward and his improvement throughout the offseason program for the Titans. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Joe, the question of what sort of an impact can Cam Ward make in year one is an interesting one to me, because I think about it from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, as you just pointed out, this is going to be the way it goes throughout the year, because we've got two very recent examples, and Titans fans are going to look at this. Certainly the prognosticators around the league are going to look at this, and they're going to judge Cam Ward according to this, fair or unfair. You know, Jaden Daniels was awesome last year, and he took the Commanders from being horrible to the NFC title game. Houston was awful before C.J. Stroud got there, and he took them immediately to the top of the division and winning playoff games. So that's the recent example of what we've got with draft picks at that position coming in and making high-level impacts. I think that I'm with you. I think that's incredibly lofty, and I do not think that that is the norm when it comes to rookie quarterbacks. However, Joe, I look at last year's Titans team, and with the limitations that we know were on that roster, and I think to myself, all right, think about how bad that team was, we know, last year, and the offensive line and all that, like special teams, all of it. And think about how many more games they would have won had they just simply gotten better quarterback play. In some cases, Joe, just simply average quarterback play. How many more games would they have won? I mean, I can think of two right off the bat. You could probably get to three or four if you really dug into it. I know it's not always as simple as that in the NFL, but that's why this position, Joe, is so important, and that's why they get paid as much as they do, is because they just have such a direct impact a lot of times on whether you're winning or not winning games, unless you just are extremely under-equipped in other parts of your football team. And that's going to be the question about the Titans this year, is how under-equipped are they elsewhere?
Yeah, it's also, and I'm not disagreeing with you, because I mean, we both agree that, you know, Levis didn't get it done, wasn't good enough, should be either somewhere else or he's a clear QB2. But he did have that same, you know, that offensive line last year in front of him. He did have one receiver, you know, so – and no tight end. You know, I mean, yes, he was not good enough. Also, I don't think it's as simple as that. Sometimes, clearly, like, you know, they're in position to win the first game, and who knows how different the season might even be if they just don't completely melt down there. And then you compound it with the going bowling against the Jets the next week, you know. But there are other instances, like you said, where you could definitely just point. You have to point at the quarterback first and say, "Man, there's just some misplays that could have made the difference." I still, you know, I don't think like let's say you had the exact same Titans team. I mean, I said this yesterday about Jared Goff; he would have been terrible in this offense because there was no protection. But you know, take one of the other top quarterbacks in the league, whoever you want, and just plug that quarterback into everything, all other conditions exactly the same. Like, what's the ceiling for the Titans last year?
It's not a playoff team, right? Like,
I don't think so either.
We know that, but again, like, I do think, I mean, Texas just brought up the Bears, the Jags, the Jets. Like, those are three games right there that happened last year that I think you can easily look at quarterback play and say, man, if you just got average quarterback play, if you're probably winning at least a couple of those, maybe all three. Like, you know, that's just the margin in this league too. Like, so as bad as the Titans were, last year. And as bad as the offensive line was, I mean, there were still some results that were just directly affected by the quarterback. And again, like, I'm not trying to sit here and act like Cam Ward's not going to have some bad games this year, because he is. Like, he's the likelihood that Cam Ward is just going to skate through his rookie season without having some pretty bad moments along the way, I don't know, is living in the land of realism there. So, look, maybe Cam Ward doesn't give them all that much improved quarterback play this year. We'll see. I kind of think there will be some chances in some games where he will, and I'm just wondering how much of a difference that would make. Now, I also wonder, how much better is this year's Titans roster than last year's Titans roster? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that question is.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't look at it. I don't look at, like, the edge, subtract Landry and add in what they've added in and think it's better.
I mean, the hope I have is the offensive line, but I still need to see it.
Yeah, I think it'll be better, but it might be marginally better. And if that's the case, it's just not a great condition for a rookie to come into. Texter says his biggest impact will be in the confidence he returns back in Titans fans, gets us excited again, and I'm here for it. I haven't been this excited since the last time we had a young promising QB and went out and got an offensive guru head coach. When was that? Young promising TV QB. Wisenhunt was supposed to be, right, with Marcus?
Yeah. Get fired up, baby.
Right? That was
Ken Wisenhunt.
Yeah. You got Norm Chow and Vince Young?
I guess people were excited about Wisenhunt for about, I don't know, 8 minutes. And then you saw
2 weeks, maybe.
Sure. I mean, look, the guy was an unbelievable week one coach. I mean, if the season ended after the first week, he would have been unbelievable as Titans head coach. The problem is, at that time, there were still 15 more weeks to get through after week one. And those other 15 weeks didn't go so well.
You know, Wisenhunt's second year, the first game is the rookie number two pick having a perfect QB rating. If Cam Ward has a debut like Marcus Mariota, are people not going to be like, yes, there's the Brian Callahan we know, right? I mean, that won't be the first reaction, but that'll be part of it, right?
I've already said it. Part of me kind of hopes that Ward sucks in game one. We saw Levis play great in game one, Mariota play great in game one. Part of me kind of hopes that Ward comes out there and throws like four picks. Like, all right, let's start here and then we can build up.
Oh, great. And then so then we can have a complete meltdown then that following Monday. I mean, I guess, you know. How about somewhere in the middle? Like, yeah,
maybe the middle's okay. Yeah.
Decent, you know, but not like tremendous.
The last two like drafted quarterback debuts for the Titans of significant picks that have been involved. Like, you know, Titans fans have thought they've had like the second coming of Peyton Manning after both of them. So
like eight touchdowns and no picks, I think, right?
Yeah,
eight
pretty darn
no
good.
Picks.
It's pretty good.
Just 80% completion, 12 yards per attempt. Yeah. So maybe somewhere down, go down a little bit from that. I think Titans fans should be excited. Look, I mean, again, go back to what Stephen Holder said yesterday. I think there are people around the league who think that way. We know that Lewis Riddick is bullish on Cam Ward. There's reason to be excited. You know, it's just, I need to know, is he going to hit the strike zone every time? And, you know, the whole live and die as a gunslinger don't die as a gunslinger. Don't do that. Cause in this league, you actually will die. Like, they'll kill your career if you're just winging it all over the place. Those are the two questions. And the thing is, those are kind of, you know, the two Levis questions too. Not that they're the same player. I do think the one area where, and Holder hit on this yesterday, and it kind of even goes to Dane Brugler. Remember Brugler, you know, a bigger, slower Kyler Murray, which people are like, oh my God. But the point being, I think the escapability and the sense of rush, the feel for rush, and to get away from it and extend plays. It is special.
Yeah.
And that's definitely not a Levis thing. You know, Levis, I think Levis, one of his weaknesses that I think we saw through the tight, and we had plenty of opportunity to see it because of that freaking offensive line. But I think what we saw was he just doesn't have a great feel for it and kind of steps into sacks sometimes and things like that. And that's one of those things that's hard to, you know, hard to really put your finger on why some quarterbacks are so much better at it. But I do think Cam Ward is – he does have a kind of a wild knack for that based on what we saw last year at Miami in particular.
Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in LD in McMinnville. LD, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. So, first off, I know nothing about hockey, so that's kind of the reason why I'm calling. Yesterday, I heard Jared talk about giving time to the general manager and the young players to develop. So why would there not be grace given to the Titans general manager and young players? It seems like it's more, hey, they need to succeed now or the general manager's out versus, hey, let's give Trotz more time because players have to develop. And like I said, I know nothing about hockey, so I'm leaning on you guys. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you. See you guys.
Thank you, LD. Appreciate it. I would say this. I heard Jared yesterday talking. I think 2028 was the year that he threw out there that he's giving Barry Trotz to. Yeah,
cool.
We were talking back and forth, and he was like, general managers get forever in this league. I was like, well, I mean, the average for general managers in the league is, I think, 4.79 years. And The Athletic actually did kind of a study on that this last year, that 4.79 years is what the average is right now. So, I mean, he's already two into it, so we'll see what happens at that point. That's the average, though, and that includes, you know, Doug Armstrong's been in St. Louis for 14 and all these different things. So, yeah, it is. Look, it is
Does it include the Poyle tenure? I mean, how far back does that go? You know what I mean?
I don't think it had Poyle in there, but if it did, I mean, my God, you're talking about 25 years at that point.
Skewing the numbers,
right? So, to me, the main difference between a general manager job in the NHL, Joe, and the general manager job in the NFL is in the NHL, for the most part, your draft picks do take 3 or 4 years to get there, and in the NFL, they're playing for you immediately. So there's a pretty major difference there. So that's why there's probably a little bit more grace given to the NHL part of it. But, like, I mean, look, if the Titans have their way now, they've been preaching patience. Like, we'll see how their owner feels about that at the end of the year. But that to me is really the main difference.
It's a great question, LD. My answer would be because Jared likes Barry and has him on his show every week and can't speak on this topic with intellectual honesty, so he's going to be a total bobo about it.
I did hear a lot of yesterday, well, what about Rand Carthon? Why couldn't you felt this way about Rand Carthon? They did come up several times.
Rand takes naps. Let Rand nap.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I think that would revolutionize our show if we went mullet skullet.
Hello, boys and girls. Guess what day it is? It is Whiskey Wednesday here again.
I don't know that I have especially pointy nipples.
Take off your robe.
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that?
My back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or what portion?
Spinal.
Sciatica.
The cap isn't real! The cap isn't real!
The Panthers have gone back-to-back in 24 and 25.
Glorious, beautiful, remarkable.
Till I'm victorious. It's so stupid.
It's a terrible song.
Another incredibly well-done mashup from Ian Safar. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours for today's Rex Rant.
Great, great stuff. God, can we just get rid of the Sciatica, though? Can we just, you know, just pretend that never happened? No, can't. I mean, is there like a statute of limitations on Sciatica being brought up? Like,
nope.
Can we get into the – no? Okay, all right. Just asking. All right, well, I'm going to, of course, veer my rant into basketball today. I actually have, since I'm constantly, people are ripping me for daring to say that I like the NBA now. Sorry, I like the NBA. I watch it. It's a good product. I do need to pick on a couple things that are not good. So first of all, in two leagues, the NBA and the WNBA, because this is coming off. Let's go WNBA first. If anybody saw any of the the Fever Sun game last night. You know, Caitlin Clark took a shot from Marina Mabry. And I think that although it was a flop by Clark, like it was a, there was a, some SGA in the, you know, in the like crumpling to the ground, it still was probably ejectable. If you watch till the end of that game, by the end of the game, they were straight up just like doing wrestling moves and taking each other to the floor and the refs completely blew it. And they seem to be really, really bad in that league in terms of just, you know, setting standards and being consistent. And like Stephanie White
went off after the game,
went off on it after the game and basically said, I mean, I can't wait to see the fine she gets, but I say good for her. And it might also hurt her. You gotta be careful. It's not just the fine. It's like, you know, you don't want to alienate, you know, yourself from that particular group of people, but she's like, everybody in this league is getting better except the officials to paraphrase what she said, but they really do have to get a handle on it. You know, the stuff that happened in the little scrum with Clark, it was really the hit before that she hit the ground that I thought, you know, was that's what caused the thing. And they just didn't get control of it. It's a product. It's a great product. It's a soaring league. Caitlin Clark is back, you know, and you know, it's just, there's a lot of great stuff going on, but like you have to have officiating, and this can go into the whole thing about officiating. Again, you need to invest in officiating. College sports, huge problem with this. You need to invest. It is a gigantic part of the thing, and it's the most vulnerable thing. People always want to think about conspiracies of leagues. That's not it. It's the gamblers. It's the people who get to these refs who could be vulnerable, and they're not making as much money as they should. So that's my constant. I constantly go back to that. As far as the NBA, and we've talked about this, and it is going to change, but like Stephen A. Smith is just like, I don't like every day now. It's like he says something where you're like, dude, what? And just for the most part, whenever I see it, it's like he just has to become the main character. Like, it's just not, I just don't think he adds much value to the discourse of the NBA. Yesterday, people got really upset about the Memphis comment he made about players, you know, saying to him that, you know, they don't think Memphis is safe. Yeah, I'd like to drill down on that. Players, like how many players? I know Ja Morant then went on a big defense of Memphis and things like that. And some people, you know, Ja has been robbed, by the way. So yeah, I'm not going to get into a whole, you know, back and forth on what people think about Memphis. You know, if you want to trash Memphis, trash Memphis. But I think it was a little bit irresponsible of Stephen A. to throw it out there like that, as if it's like some huge agreed upon league-wide thing. And I have my questions about that with him. But beyond that, I'm sick of him. I'm really, and I've never had a strong feeling about him one way or the other. I always liked him better than Skip Bayless. Like if you choose me to pick lesser of two evils between Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless, I'll pick Stephen A. Smith. But I just think he's kind of gotten overwhelmingly annoying now.
Have you seen the videos of him, like his entrance walk into the arena? Like for whatever reason, the cameras follow him, and he's got that little bounce to him. And some of the replies when he comes in is just hilarious on some of the tweets that ESPN throws out there. It's always like, well, yeah, the main event is here. Stephen A. Smith thinks he's playing tonight. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's like you really aren't like I don't again like we have the best show ever coming in next year, and I love every bit of Ernie, Charles, Shaq, and Kenny. You know, I want to hear from them. They are hilarious. They are, you know, and look, I mean, those three guys. Ernie's a great point guard, and then those three guys all played. But more than that, they're just the chemistry and the just everything about it is amazing. I just like, it's hard to watch the ESPN stuff. It's hard to watch. And, you know, now Stephen A is going to like run for president. Is that what's going to happen?
I don't know what he's doing.
You know, I'm kind of, you know, it's just, it seems to be like this. And then he's like, going on soap operas and stuff like that. It's like, you know, maybe go into that stuff and leave the analysis to others, because I just don't ever hear analysis from him that I'm like, you know, that's a good point. That's a good point about the game. It's mostly just getting into these personal beefs with people and being so sensitive when someone like Halliburton says something that's totally fair, and trying to create, you know, these, again, create these beefs when it's like, who, dude, like, why? But people, hey, look, he obviously drives audience. I mean, people get excited, and some of it may be hate watching, hate listening, whatever. People, he drives he moves the needle. And so we're not done hearing from him. But it's just lately, I just feel like it's like, I just want to go through a day without, you know, someone saying, oh my God, did you see what he said today?
Yeah, the ESPN NBA coverage in general is pretty bad. Like, it's not good. And we'll see. I mean, obviously they've got, in my opinion, probably the best studio show of all time coming in next year. Hopefully they don't screw with it too much and they just let those guys do their thing, but it's pretty bad on ESPN.
Do not
right
screw
now.
With it.
Yeah.
No, and Charles is already, Barkley's already like sounding the warrant, like, you know, he's worried. So it's like, if they do anything other than say, here's the cameras on, guys, then they're total idiots. Texter says, Joe, if you think that was a dive, you need your eyes checked. Boomer, she got hit. I said it. I think it was ejectable, but I mean, like, she didn't get shot. I mean, like, if you
watch
that
play,
she sold it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think that was a good opportunity for the refs to take control of the situation, and they didn't.
615-737.
There you go. Things about basketball I don't like. You're welcome.
Nice. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll have Mia O'Brien join us at 8:30 down in Jacksonville. We'll get her thoughts on the Jaguars and Travis Hunter and how that's all setting up heading into this season later in the program. Get back into the Cup Final. Florida gets it done again, and our Predators conversation coming up next. Robbie and Rexrow, 1025, 1063, The Game.